Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh James Show, and by your request and my great pleasure, we have Jesse Ventura this hour, and I'm really looking forward to this. You know, often we talk about the fact that the price of our liberty is eternal vigilance, to paraphrase our founding fathers. And for many years, really since the end of the Civil War, most of us haven't been terribly vigilant as a group. It means more than voting, it means getting involved. And, you know, I can't think of anyone who has become more involved in modern times, someone from outside the system, someone not raised and groomed to go into political service, than Jesse Ventura. He has a lot to tell us and a great book to read. It's already a New York Times bestseller, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me. If you go to Raleigh.net, I've got a link to a great price at Amazon, but wherever you pick it up, do. And, you know, I try to make it a habit to read the books that that authors send, if we're going to have one on. And we don't do authors very often. And the reality was, yesterday I realized that I hadn't even picked it up. So when I got off the air last night, I started to read Don't Start the Revolution Without Me. And this morning I finished it. All right, it was one of those things. It wasn't, you know, at first it was, well, let me see what I can get out of this for the show. But within a few pages, it was, I really want to know about this guy. And I thought I did, and I really want to see what he's got to say. So it's a fascinating read, and if nothing else, it'll get you to think, and often that is the name of the game. So you will have hopefully all the questions that you have asked, because a number of people over the last several months when it was speculated that Jesse might run said, well, what do you think about this or that, or what would he do about this? Well, we're about to find out.
The Raleigh James Show.
But before we do, I want to mention gold a moment. Yes, even at ridiculously high prices comparatively, gold can be a terrific investment if you know what you're doing, and that's a very big caveat. Now, firstly, why gold? Well, for one thing, it's the original investment. It'll never be worthless. The currency can fall apart. The country can go to hell. Everything around you can collapse. Gold will have value. Also, you take possession of the metal, if you're buying it, right? And gold will afford you privacy, which is even more important in this day and time. The problem is that it's largely an unregulated commodity. So when you're hearing somebody say, buy gold, they're selling you a product. And if you don't understand how the products are valued, whether it's a common value that everybody agrees to, what the commission rate is that can be as high as 80%, what the premium is, and there will be, then you have no idea to analyze whether that's a good deal or not. I want you to do some research. And when you do, I think you're going to come across Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company. Melody and her staff have been in business for well over a dozen years. They've traded in everything, but they're not middlemen. They're not brokers. They're not pushing any particular product or anything at all. They have the kind of customer service I used to say was reserved for the rarefied few, but frankly impossible to find anywhere these days. It's personalized, everything done by hand. You call, you get an answer from a live person, no voicemail menus, and it's terrific. But you can start at their website. DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. Read Melody's notes, the frequently asked questions, read the newsletters, and this is going to give you a feel for what's going on, and then feel free to call them. There's no pressure to invest whatsoever. 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Once you understand what you're buying, then, yes, absolutely look at gold, and I know you'll come back to Discount Gold and Silver when you're ready to buy. Why? Well, the discounts and the commission rate, nobody beats it. Fastest shipping in the industry. Never a minimum order. So if you want to start off with one coin, that's fine. And again, that kind of customer service that's literally worth its weight in gold, pun and trite phrase intended. They are terrific. I put my money where my mouth is. These are the only people I buy through. Gold can be great, and it can be tremendously disappointing. And the difference is, did you know what you were buying? DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. 800-375-4188. And you remember to tell them that Raleigh sent you. Jesse Ventura, thanks for taking time out to join us.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. I loved the book. I thought it was very well done. Gave me a lot of insight into you and your thinking. And what I found most interesting about it is the one thing about Jesse Ventura is just when you think you know him, something comes out of the blue and you say, oh, really? So I'll have my oh, really moment before the end of the hour, I'm sure. But the first thing I wondered, and I guess you touched on this to a degree, but obviously you've been a very public figure long before politics, and you grew up in a home where politics was often debated, so you really in some ways were primed to do that. But with that in mind, when you actually assumed the governorship, what was the biggest surprise in terms of how it really is?
Well, I think for me the biggest surprise was off the top of my head right now would be the fact that the people are really third on the list. These two parties, they will allow the public to suffer if the wrong person is going to get credit for doing good. I think that's really the most eye-opening thing I had, was the fact that it doesn't end at the election, that the politics continues on, you know, where I call me naive a little, but after the election I thought, well, now isn't it our job to do the best job for the state of Minnesota? Isn't that what we're here to do? And I realized that with these two political parties, that's not the case. They couldn't allow me to be even more successful because of the fact that that could lead to more third party or independent people being elected. So they would go out of their way to, you know, sabotage, whatever you want to call it, anything that I would try to do, or they'd ignore it. Like, take in case, you all know we had a bridge that tumbled into the Mississippi River here.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the press up here ranted and raved how for 30 years we didn't have a new transportation bill. Well, they forget the fact that in 1999, L. Tinklenberg, who was my commissioner of MnDOT, he and I proposed a 10-year funding plan called Moving Minnesota, which, if adopted, would have paid for the entire, you know, from 2000 all the way to 2010, for roads, bridges, mass transit, all of that. And quite possibly, had they enacted that bill, there's a chance maybe that bridge would have been found unsafe and been repaired in time. Who knows? But the point was, the media ignored the fact that the Democrats and Republicans ignored a 10-year transportation bill that I submitted to them, and see, because they didn't want to do anything with it, because that might make me look successful or be successful.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's business as usual. Not a more glaring example, perhaps, in Congress than Ron Paul. The Republicans would prefer to elect a Democrat than highlight his beliefs, and that's been going on for a while. But you're right, everyone is complicit, and especially the myth of the free press. In fact, I've always said that's the greatest myth in America, that we have a free press and we're gonna hear what's going on. One of the illusions that I have said all along is we don't have two parties. We have one party with two heads, and the polarization is to keep people believing that there's a difference here.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, they're more alike than they are different.
Sure. And when you talk about not getting thing done, or the self-righteous, well, we know better than the people what's good for them. And nothing's been more telling recently than the Supreme Court decision on the Second Amendment and hearing governors and mayors and police chiefs and now the head of the FBI just howl at the thought that a citizen had a right to carry. And I know that's an issue with you. You are a Second Amendment supporter, correct?
Absolutely. The thing that disturbs me is when they always tell you they're not going to take away your ability to hunt. And I always kind of laugh at that, and I go, the Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting. Back when it was written, hunting was a given. If you didn't hunt, you didn't eat.
Right.
And point being, the Second Amendment is there so that we as citizens have the ability to arm and defend ourselves if our government ever becomes oppressive.
Right, against
or if
them.
Our government becomes, you know, something we don't want it to be, we then have the ability to rise up and have a revolution or overthrow it. And that's the reason, and form militias. That's the reason for the Second Amendment. It's so that, notice always when a dictator comes in, the first thing a dictator does is disarm the people.
Right.
I was in the Philippines. I was physically in the Philippines the day Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law. And he gave the Philippine people 10 days to turn in all of their firearms, or it was the death penalty.
Right.
If you got caught with one. And why does a dictator do that? To disarm the people so that they have no mechanism of defense.
Well, sure, and our forefathers were not silent on this. In addition to the Second Amendment, of course, there is just a plethora of writings on that. I joke, oh, yeah, it's our ability to hunt them when they're taking away our liberty.
And exactly. Very well put.
That's precisely what we've got here, yet we have... I won't say the majority of the people, but certainly the majority of the press and a number of very outspoken figures who will deny the reality of more guns equal less crime every time. Even when you look at it as self-defense rather than our defense against the government, the statistics are clear, yet we have this self-righteous, we know better than you how you will live your life. And that seems to be the tone, start to finish, both these parties. The left may say we want to control what you do in the boardroom, and the right may say we want to control what you do in the bedroom. But I agree with you that most people really do want to be left alone.
Oh, yeah, wholeheartedly. To me, I now live half my life in Mexico, where I might add, you can't own a gun.
Right.
You know, Mexico outlaws them. You'll go to prison if you get caught with one. But I live down there, and one of the reasons why and where I live down there, and people have always said, well, the Mexican government's corrupt, and, well, okay, maybe it is, but it's nice to know that going in.
Good
point. If you come in with the assumption they are corrupt, then it's not that shocking, but we come in with the assumption our government's not corrupt.
Right.
And it's more shocking then. But point I'm getting to is that where I live down there, there is no government.
Which is exactly
I live 850 miles down the Baja where there's no electricity and an hour from dirt from a paved road. And I don't see any government around, and it's so enjoyable to live your life free of any type of government.
Now, it's interesting because obviously when you drive down there, you go through every form of Mexican community and every form of government or what passes for government they have. One of the big debates here, obviously, is the prospect of the North American Union, the joining of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Do you think that's likely to happen, and what do you think is the end result if it does?
I think it's a possibility, but I don't think it's in the near future.
Okay.
I wouldn't expect it, you know, in the next decade, you know, before 2020.
Okay.
At least that's how I think about it. You know, I don't know. It's interesting because I drive there, and that's what the book's all about. Okay. What I do is 3,300 miles, and I took the artistic liberty of doing 2 to 3 trips and combining it into one for the sake of the book. And it's a very interesting today crossing the borders both ways. When you drive into Mexico, there's nobody there. I've actually, the border crossings are different, of course. They can be a few miles apart from each other. I've actually stopped my vehicle, rolled the windows down, looked both ways and said, doesn't anyone give me a piece of paper or say buenos dias? No. I can drive right into Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, you flip that around, I'm a U.S. citizen coming back into the United States. The majority of the border crossings are all United States plate cars, and it takes hours to get into the United States. And now we want to put up a fence at the border. Well, I like the old saying, show me a 20-foot fence and I'll show you somebody with a 21-foot ladder. And the point being, fences have never worked. The greatest fence in the world is the Great Wall of China. It failed in 1644 or whatever it was when the Mongols broke through. And I hope they make ours tourist-friendly like the Great Wall, so that when it's done, it'll at least make us some money as a tourist attraction. Again, people in this country need to wake up when they feel this threat from below the border that we need to put a fence up and turn our country into East Berlin. Remember this for a moment, that a fence today to keep someone out 10 years from now might just be to keep you in.
Now, when we look at the border, there's a few things. Firstly, we've been sold a bill of goods on the war on terror. And needless to say, you've got people, the best motivator in the world for people to hand over their rights is make them afraid. People
yep.
in droves are afraid they'll hand over their rights. So we're told we have terrorists at every turn. Now, if that is the case, then a porous border will sink us. So my feeling is, as far as this aspect, you can't have it both ways. You can't force us into something draconian like a Patriot Act and have a border that's leaking like a sieve. How does that compute?
Yeah, oh, you're totally right on that, and I say get rid of both of them.
Now, next thing
get rid
is,
of the Patriot Act,
well, yes.
And as far as the border goes, you know, I often thought about this, Raleigh. Imagine for a moment that you're a Mexican couple or something, and you're fairly well-to-do, and you've got money in that, and you just decided, you know, I'm going to drive to the United States and take a vacation. How much paperwork do they have to go through to do that?
You know, I have no idea.
Now, why shouldn't they just be able to drive into our country, vacation, drive around, do what they do, and then imagine if you're here for and so you meet somebody and the person were to offer you a job and you decided to stay. What's the matter with that?
Okay. So let's...
My bottom line is this. The funniest thing I saw during all the protests and all that was a sign that said the pilgrims didn't have visas.
You're right. But what the pilgrims also didn't have was the prospect of quote-unquote benefits. Now,
okay, wait a minute now. Let's not blame the Mexican people for that. Let's blame the government people who created a system that allows the Mexican people to abuse it.
Absolutely true.
You've got to go to the source of the problem. Don't blame these poor brown-skinned people because they come up here and it's available for them. If you went to their country and things like that were available to you, you would use it too, probably.
Oh, sure.
Blame the people that created it, the Democrats and Republicans.
Absolutely. And in so doing, what we've got right now with the people who want to, quote unquote, give amnesty, the McCains of the world or the Kennedys of the world, we've got individuals who are hell-bent on keeping the benefit system intact. And as long as the two coexist, what we wind up doing is importing poverty. And I don't ever blame the person who takes advantage of the attractive nuisance. And that's a well-known concept, obviously. If you make it attractive, people come. But what we've got right now is we have the myth of working conditions and the myth of minimum wage. Because, of course, what happens if you're employing somebody illegally, well, first thing you've done is you've got somebody who's your slave class because they don't have the right to complain. And so that's the attractiveness to hiring them. So they are as used as we are. But where we are right now is nobody is looking at it as you're talking about it holistically and saying, look, if we're going to leave the border open, then this is what we have to do regarding what our services are or what our employment law is.
Well, one of the things that always gets me is that they always say that the illegals are abusing our health system and all that. Well, if one of them's bleeding and goes into the emergency room, don't you think they deserve care? They're a human being.
The when we get into health care, and again, see, this is the whole thing, and we can talk about it emotionally, and we can talk about it economically, but the way it's set up right now, and again, I'm not faulting any player in this, but the way it's set up is we're actually importing poverty, because we're importing people who are going to work under the table and going to use the quote-unquote free health care system as their health care, and it creates a huge problem. So saying we're just opening the border without saying we're going to look at logically what we're doing in terms of services is a prescription for disaster.
Sure. And, I agree with that.
And that's where we sort of are right now. We put it on this emotional level, but I'm glad you brought up health care because that's another thing. And I look at this to some degree as the Hegelian dialectic. The government creates a problem and then puts forth a draconian solution. And so right now, the biggest problem in healthcare, I think, economically, is the cost shifting. You go in uninsured and you're paying 10 to 20 times what the big blues or Medicaid is. But there's no country in the world with socialized medicine whereby the quality of care or the availability of care improves. So given our reality, what would you do about healthcare?
Well, to me, yeah, it's an interesting roll of the dice, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm an expert on it, because I'm not. and it's a huge, huge problem. But certainly I'm not the kind of person that likes to have things socialized through the government.
Good.
That's my first general reaction, is that I believe the government is far too intrusive in our lives already. And, you know, them providing health care to the nation, I don't particularly like that idea at all. Because generally when the government does things, it ends up very, very expensive, especially when they go beyond, I believe, what their realm is of what they should be doing. And providing health care, to me, is not a role of government.
I agree wholeheartedly. Unfortunately, at this point, they're 51% of the payment of health care. So the question then becomes how to get them out of it. Because one of the things, I guess it was de Tocqueville in the 1800s when he studied our prison system, who came in and said, as soon as your people realize they can vote on your own entitlements, your system of government is lost. Well, today, if Kennedy were running today, he'd be considered a mean-spirited right-winger when he said, ask what you can do for your country. People are pandered in all degrees. Elect me, and I'll give you this. How do you change that paradigm?
It's tough. You know, I think to start the change of that is you have to change the system in which they operate. You can change the faces and you can change the names, and it'll all be the same because it's the system. And I think that's where you've got to break away. And I think it starts with the campaigns.
Right.
If you want to take it to, we have a system today of electing people that is based upon the concept of panhandling and bribery.
Right.
Because you go out and you tell people, give me money so I can go do this job.
Right.
Well, that's crazy. You know, why is it that way? And then if they give you anything more than that, of course, then it becomes bribery.
Right.
And so people who are comfortable with this system have to be comfortable with the concept of panhandling and bribery. So I don't think you're getting America's best serving in public office because of the system.
Oh, you're so right. People are running from it. That's why I give you such kudos for actually stepping up and being involved in it. The book is Don't Start the Revolution Without Me. Jesse Ventura is the author and, of course, the former governor of Minnesota, among other many varied things in life, and perhaps in the future a presidential candidate. So we'll get back to it in moments right here on the Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show. To the max, the Raleigh James Show.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if the president was the watchdog of our rights, our liberties, such as rarely the case. The president, more than anything else, though, sets the tone of the debate, in some ways our titular leader. The real decisions often come down to Congress, but even so, that bully pulpit is very important for the mood of the country. So we're talking to Jesse Ventura, who I think would probably improve that mood exponentially. Don't Start the Revolution Without Me is the book. It's on the bestseller list for a reason. You won't be able to put it down. Great price at Amazon.com. There's a link at Raleigh.net to that, but however you procure it, it is worth the read. I've got a number of things, as I mentioned, to ask Jesse. And yes, I said there was something when I read this book. It was my only what the moment, so we'll get to that too.
Yeah.
The Raleigh James Show.
But first, let me mention the Seacrane Company, and it is truly a terrific catalog. If you're a radio fan, oh, it's must-have. It's Nirvana. From things that are inexpensive and, well, I consider the great marriage settler, it's the last argument you will have with your spouse. If you love to listen to radio in bed and your spouse wants to sleep, how dare they? Get a pillow speaker. You will hear it in full fidelity. They will hear absolutely nothing. Now, of course, you want to hook it up to something neat. Have you ever considered a Wi-Fi radio? I talk about these so often. It's a way to listen to every stream online without even turning on your computer. You use this just like a radio, and you will hear over 11,500 things that aren't available on AM or FM near you. That's for sure. Now, there's no software to load. There's no learning curve. You don't have to know nothing. And you're saying, what do I have to have? Well, a broadband connection to the internet, but that's about it. As long as you got a cable modem or a DSL line, you're good to go. And you will, let's say you move from one part of the country to another, but you still miss your favorite radio stations from back in the day. They're probably on the Wi-Fi radio. It'll be just like being there. Maybe you've got a favorite syndicated radio host who's not available where you are locally or on at a time that's not convenient for you. Well, I bet they're online and probably 24/7. Or maybe things that are exclusively online. Got a favorite music type you can't hear where you are, some northern soul, some beach music, some obscure country, whatever it might be, guarantee you there's a stream online. And if there is, it's on the Wi-Fi radio. So check that out at ccradio.com. While you're there, look at the CC Radio SW. Oh, man. Best AM ever. It's got that twin coil ferrite antenna. You will pick up things that just no other radio touches. Great FM and all the short wave band. Shortwave's never been more affordable or easier to use. You can control everything if you want, or you can set it and forget it. But if you want to tweak the bandwidth or the RF gain, and of course, a true rotary tuning knob, but a digital readout so you see exactly where you are on the dial. Any DXer will tell you how important that little feature is. But shortwave is wonderful. Not only is it a window on the world as to what other people around the world are saying, but it's also a great window on America, because you'd be surprised at the patriots and others who are on shortwave exclusively. So take a look at that too. CCRadio.com. It's all online. CCRadio.com. If you prefer to give them a call, they'll be back tomorrow whenever you get up. Operator's not standing by, but they'd love to talk to you in person tomorrow. 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE or ccradio.com. And you remember to tell them that Raleigh sent you. Jesse Ventura, kind enough to take out time to spend with us. And so, as I was mentioning, Jesse, in some ways it's a titular leader or a bully pulpit. But if you were president right now, looking at the fact the president sets the mood of the country, what would you be telling people regarding the current gas price crisis?
Oh, man. First of all, let me say this. I wouldn't want to be the new president of the United States this coming term because of the fact that whoever comes in is going to have a huge multiple messes to clean up. And I believe they're going to spend all four of their years basically cleaning up the messes that are being left behind. And you virtually won't have anything that you'll be able to do on your own, really, because you're going to have to focus so much on that.
Well,
so having said that, yeah. The current gas prices, well, I found it interesting that I think in some ways the control naturally of all the oil of the world is the Saudis. And for decades now, the production of oil has been restrained and withheld of Iraq, who is one of the largest oil producing countries or could be in the world. And it was done through the embargo and now being done through the war. So I think the faster Iraq gets up and gets up to full capacity and gets their oil out into the world market, the better it'll be for everybody, because it's been curtailed for probably 15 or 20 years now.
One of the things that comes up a lot is the concept of explorative drilling, which is expensive, and that's why back in 74 when they started, as soon as gas dropped in price, everybody stopped, and so it went in 79 and on and on. But right now, especially when we look at the stranglehold being off our shores and a lot of oil being on our shores, not only Anwar but Gull Island that very few people discuss, we've got the means to be self-sufficient. Would you be for making us so?
I would be for making us self-sufficient, absolutely, but not necessarily focusing on fossil fuel or oil. I think it's time, very much the time, that we have to realize that eventually those things are going to run out. And the more that it's involved and the larger it gets, the faster we're going to run out. So we've got to look for alternative methods. We've got to look for electric cars. We've got to look for other ways to do it other than drilling oil and using up oil. Oil will always be a part of it, but we need to wean ourselves away from it. You know, this whole oil crisis right now, it's tough, but you know what the upside I see to it? I see the upside that our health care we just spoke about, one of the reasons our health is so bad is people in the United States are so obese and they're so out of shape. Well, maybe the price of gas has a upside to it that it'll start people walking around more and exercising more because they won't be able to pay for gas like they used to, so they're going to have to use their bodies more to get around.
Okay.
And maybe in the long run, that's good.
Now that you mention that, you're right. We are a sedentary society. I'll give you that. But as soon as you said that, with weight, it got into the adulteration of our food supply, which is unbelievable. The idea that there's virtually no sugar and there's tons of high fructose corn syrup that is a guaranteed weight gainer, and the genetic modifications, and a recent Supreme Court decision that pretty much said, well, if the FDA approves it, you have no recourse to sue. Now, with that in mind, we've got adulterated food from China. We've got it right on our shores. We have decisions that have legalized things that are clearly not in the interest of health. What would you do with regard to the FDA?
Well, first of all, you got to get the lobbyists out of government.
Good
There's
luck.
Your bottom line, because these people that are in there now respond to the people that give them money. As I told you early in the show, the people come third. First is the party. Second is the contributors.
Okay.
Third is the public.
Right. Now, with that in mind, nature abhors a vacuum, obviously, and the reason the lobbyists are able to do what they do is the complete, statistically speaking, lack of involvement of the public. Really, since the end of the Civil War, we slowly have been giving up our watchdog status. And so now, of course, for most folks, you want to get into Congress, you want to get the lobbyist who's going to give you the most money so you can run the 7-second sound bites and get elected. The only way I see this paradigm changing is with the people being willing to return to an oversight capacity. And certainly the news media is not for us there, so maybe this is the biggest question ever. How do you motivate the average person to return to involvement with government?
Well, you know, that's always been the 800-pound gorilla.
Yes.
Which I can't understand, because here's how I explain it to people. I always say to them, you work 5 days a week, right, at least? And they go, yeah. I said, you pay attention to your job, don't you? Because it's important to you that you do, because otherwise they're going to fire you and you're not going to get a paycheck. Yes, I pay great attention to my job. I said, then why on earth wouldn't you pay attention to who takes 2 days of the fruits of your labor, of the five, and it's closely getting to three?
Sure.
Why wouldn't you pay attention to the people who do that?
Well, the answer is, of course,
which is the government.
Right. And the answer is, of course, they don't have to write the check at the end of the year. It comes directly out of their taxes. They're told that Medicare and Social Security aren't a tax and aren't coming off the same top, just like their income tax. So they never see the money to begin with. I guarantee if we did away with withholding, there'd be rioting in the streets.
Well, and we'll step forward. And you know, the one place where I agreed in the past presidential with Governor Huckabee. Mike and I are both, we were both governors at the same time, and Huckabee was for a national sales tax. Abolish the income tax. There is a great thing to do.
If you also
abolish the income tax and go to a national sales tax.
And you've got to abolish Social Security and Medicare withholding at the same time.
Well, you do one first.
I don't know.
You know, you don't always have to do them all at once. I say the first step you do is abolish the income tax, go to a national sales tax. My reason for feeling that way, because wealth to me is not determined by what you earn. Wealth is determined by what you spend.
You can be, of course,
but that isn't the way our society is set up.
Well, no.
Our society is set up, wealth is what you earn, not what you spend. And the case in point, you can make $1 million a year, but if you live in a little studio apartment, drive an old beat-up Volkswagen, you're hardly living like a millionaire, so therefore why should you be taxed like one? Now, if you buy the penthouse, you buy a Mercedes and a yacht, well, you're now living like a millionaire, we'll tax you like one. That's what the national sales tax does. It would allow you to bring home the gross on your check. You would then determine what you paid taxes on by what you bought. So it, say this week you didn't want to pay any taxes. Don't buy anything. You won't be taxed.
I would agree with that. The reason that I'm hell-bent on the tax of Medicare and Social Security being wrapped up into it is, for one thing, it is a tax. It's 15.4%, even though the employee only sees half of that generally coming out of the check. But it continues to be the downside of the system, which is that you are tracked. The income you make is recorded. It is data-based. Much of the problem with the IRS is not only the extraction of your funds, but it's the complete loss of your privacy. And so not doing it together guarantees it's too tasty for the government to ever give up the other half.
But the national sales tax will also solve that problem right there. You know what it'll do? It'll make it so that you as an individual no longer have to keep any books. All taxes would then be paid from business to government. And you know what you do with internal revenue? Everybody says, well, they'll all be out of work then. No. Here's what you do with them. Reverse their role. Instead of them watching us, the citizen, turn their role around and make them the watchdog for us to ensure businesses are paying properly to the government and to ensure government is using it properly after they get it.
Yeah, good luck on that, and I would agree with
that. It'd be easy to change the role. As soon as you go to a national sales tax, those people would do it rather than lose their job.
Oh, no, believe me, I'm with you. I do not want income tax, and I don't want withholding of any form. I'm just saying that until you get enough like-minded folks in the government, it's too titillating to continue to keep tabs on the public. That's always
been... Well, the problem is not like-minded folks in the government. The problem is like-minded folks of the people.
Well, they're going
to... I tried to make a major reform in Minnesota. I wanted to get rid of one house and go to unicameral.
Right, like Nebraska.
Yes, because in a state level, you do not need two houses.
Right.
It's a waste. You know, get rid of one. And Nebraska's had unicameral now for over 75 years. They have never had a special session due to the fact they couldn't reach a budget conclusion. Minnesota now, every other year, they got a special session because they can't reach a budget conclusion. And I tried to do that. I got virtually no support from the people.
Right.
So therefore, the legislature, Democrats, Republicans, they completely ignored it. I couldn't even get a vote on the floor.
Right. So this
because the public simply wouldn't respond.
Right. They were apathetic. Well, as I say, the Nobel Prize in politics goes to he who can turn economics into a sex scandal, because everybody remembers the blue dress from Monica, but very few people look at some of the bills that were signed. So, of course, that goes back to that 800-pound gorilla. But if I had to position you, Jesse, and I would had to pick one thing about Jesse Ventura based upon what I read in Don't Start the Revolution Without Me and what I've looked at in various facets of your career, of which I'm aware, I would say the one thing about Jesse Ventura is you're a no BS person. You cut to the chase, whether you're meeting with Castro, debating the 9/11 findings, and God love you for that, or seeing the political claptrap for what it is. And I'm eternally grateful for that. Now, of course, you know there's a butt coming, and so here it is. Here,
all right.
Here was my, you know, what the moment. I was stunned. I was flummoxed. I could go on over the idea that you were impressed by Al Gore's movie. Now, I read about your friendship, and I got that, notwithstanding. The scientific evidence shows that the biggest BS out there is that it's a fact that man is responsible for climate change. Not only is that hotly debated, but it's almost conclusive that it's junk science among non-political scientists. And now, this wouldn't matter, except that we're predicating future economic conditions on this. So I'm
curious.
Well,
okay, wait a minute. Let's say what you're saying is true and it's all BS.
Yeah.
Isn't it still smarter not to pollute?
Not if.
Wait a minute.
No,
that's the bottom line.
The answer to that
even
is no.
Even if you don't believe in global warming, it is still better to have more efficient engines.
No.
It's still better not to pollute.
No.
Everything concerning global warming is still a better thing to do. So why wouldn't you do it anyway?
Well, here's why I wouldn't do it anyway. And that's because when you look at what wants to happen here, we want to dramatically change the American economy for this. And in fact, we want to take the third world nations who, if you do believe in this premise, are the biggest among the polluters, China and others, not give them any sanctions and put economic restrictions on America that can absolutely level us. Now, if we had a reason to believe...
We don't have to do any of that.
But that's what Gore wants to do.
Well, fine. I don't agree with him on that.
Well, you see again...
But the point, I like this film, and I disagree with you. Did you just see there's going to be no ice on the polar ice cap this year?
And did you realize how cyclical that is as opposed to man-made constraints?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that it matches right up with carbon dioxide, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. Oh, okay, that's the greatest fallacy with this movie. In fact, it was the one that opened my eyes to begin with.
So, in other words, all this car pollution isn't hurting us a bit.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the graphs are backwards.
Wait. All of this pollution... You know, I experienced global warming firsthand. I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm going to give you an example of it firsthand that made me a believer. Do you know how I did that?
Tell me all about it.
All right. I was waiting at the border to get back into my country, and, of course, it's like a three-hour wait. Where you can go into Mexico, there's no wait. But to get back here, it takes 3 hours. Well, the temperature that day in the desert was 99 degrees, right?
Which is very common.
Sure. So I got in line, and we were four abreast, and it took 2-3 hours of all these cars running, waiting to cross the border. Well, I had a brand-new pickup truck, and it happens to have a thermostat on it. The outside temperature while I was waiting in line went from 99 degrees to 119. Now, I could have moved over two blocks, and it would have been 99 degrees. But while I was waiting in line with all these masses of cars to cross into the United States, the temperature was 119. Couldn't quite make 120, but it was still up 20 degrees right there than what it was one block away. Explain that to me.
Well, no, the thing I want you to explain to me is how you feel that in any way affects the global climate. The fact that your ambient temperature...
Well, it was 20 degrees warmer there than it was a block away.
And the difference...
And who was caught... Wait a minute. And who was causing the 20-degree rise in temperature? We were.
Okay. All right.
Driving our cars.
All right.
How much more simple can it get for you? As you complimented me earlier,
yes.
You said I'm very straightforward. Well, how much more simpler can it be? Our cars were there running. The temperature was 20 degrees higher, warmer. Let's use the correct term. It was 20 degrees warmer than it was one block away.
And you're
contending. Is that not warming the planet?
No, I don't think it is. So you're contending
really?
that may have an effect on the atmosphere and the planet. And
no, I'm just saying the temperature was 20 degrees hotter. That's all I'm saying.
And I'm saying it
and
has
it was
virtually,
being caused by us humans.
And I'm saying it has virtually no effect. But we'll agree to disagree.
Well, wait a minute. Are you denying that it wasn't 20 degrees hotter?
No, I'm denying
that.
Well,
then I'm correct.
Okay.
Because we created a place there where us humans made it 20 degrees hotter.
Well, you know, when I use air conditioning, I can make it 30 degrees colder.
Sure, and you can use up all that energy to do it, too.
Of course, but, I mean, we can go tit for tat on that night.
Well, you want to hear another little thing that I find disturbing?
What?
Why is it that our television companies, when you turn your TV off, it's not off?
Oh, well, actually, when I turn my television off, it is off because I cut the power.
No, it isn't. If you use a remote control.
I don't. I cut the
power. If you use a remote control, the TV is not off. It's still burning a half an amp when you're not watching it.
Well, of course it is, but as I say, I cut the power.
But why do we do that? Why do we have that? You know how I learned that? You're probably not like me for this either. My house in Mexico is completely solar.
Well, I think that's terrific.
I think that all homes should now be mandatory that they have solar put into them.
Well, I certainly think that you should have that option, but now we can get
back to it. No, I think it should be mandatory.
All right. Well, see,
that
that's interesting.
It should be part of the building codes.
So you do have a facet of you that wants to control the populace. It is the issues that are important to you.
No, yeah, sometimes.
Right. Okay.
When it's an issue, mm-hmm. when it's an issue that affects all of us, just like roads and highways, we all drive them, so therefore they have to fall. I believe there's a role for government, yes.
Okay. All right, let me, I'm running out of time, but you mentioned road and highway. Do you believe we should be selling off our infrastructure to a foreign country?
Should, no. In fact, I will tell you this. The most important thing that's being avoided in the debates right now is the deficit.
You're
you don't
right.
hear one word about the deficit, which is now over $9 trillion.
And I gotta tell you, I would like to hear...
The point is this. Let me make my point.
I got 10 seconds, and I don't want to lose
you. Okay, the point is you will never have a strong economy if you're $9 trillion in debt.
Of course
not.
They
should be put in jail. They would if they were in the private sector.
I agree, and I wish we had time to get into personal debt because that is equally a big problem. And I hope you will join me again because I left a lot of things unsaid, and I'd love to say them.
We'll call up that publicist and we'll see if we can do it.
Thanks, Jesse. Thanks for joining us.
And shut your car engine off when you're not driving it.
All right. Thanks, Jesse.
Bye-bye. Bye.